Civilization.
Dharma.
Engagement.
Bhavaliyate.
Is systematically vanquished.
Ninam.
Of humankind.
Vana.
Caste.
Ashrama.
Orders of society.
Acharayuta.
Composed in a good manner.
Chaimaya,
in terms of the Vedic injunction.
Tata,
thereafter.
Artha,
economic development.
Kama, abhinivesita,
fully absorbed in sense gratification.
Atmanam,
of men.
Shunam,
like dogs.
Kapinam,
like monkeys.
Iva,
thus.
Varna,
Sankara,
unwanted population.
Translation. This is the father of the young Brahmana boy, Sringi, speaking to his son.
At that time, the people in general will fall systematically from the path of a progressive civilization in respect to the qualitative engagements of the caste and the orders of society and the Vedic injunctions. Thus, they will be more attracted to economic development for sense gratification. And as a result, there will be an unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys.
Purport. That's Srila Prabhupada.
It is foretold herein that in the absence of a monarchical regime, the general mass of people will be an unwanted population like dogs and monkeys. As the monkeys are too sexually inclined and dogs are shameless in sexual intercourse, the general mass of population born of illegitimate connection will systematically go astray from the Vedic way of good manners and qualitative engagements in the castes and orders of life. The Vedic way of life is the progressive march of the civilization of the Aryans. The Aryans are progressive in Vedic civilization. The Vedic civilization's destination is to go back to Godhead, back home, where there is no birth, no death, no old age, and no disease. The Vedas direct everyone not to remain in the darkness of the material world, but to go towards the light of the spiritual kingdom, far beyond the material sky. The qualitative caste system and the orders of life are scientifically planned by the Lord and his representatives, the great Rishis. The perfect way of life gives all sorts of instruction in things, both material and spiritual. The Vedic way of life does not allow any man to be like the monkeys and dogs. A degraded civilization of sense gratification and economic development is the byproduct of a godless or kingless government of the people, by the people, and for the people. The people should not, therefore, begrudge the poor administrations they themselves elect. Om Gyanat Timurandasya Gyanandana Shalakya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Kudave Namaha Tadaya Dharma Prabhadiyate Nyunam. The father of Shindi is speaking that you should understand what will be the consequences of your behavior. You might think that's a very small thing to understand the consequences of behavior. But we should analyze ourselves and see how our consciousness has been victimized by Kali Yuga. Here is a very simple test you can make. Think about doing something which is against the Vedic principles, against the regular principles, and then see how strongly you can perceive the consequences. The so-called advanced modern civilization has totally and systematically destroyed people's ability to see the results of sinful activity. Therefore, everyone thinks that you have two separate subjects. Okay, here you have sense gratification, And way over here, you have distress. And there's actually no connection between the two. This is the contribution of the so-called advanced society of today. They cannot connect sense gratification with distress. They think that sense gratification is one thing. It's way over here. It's nice. Get as much as you can. Make as much money as you can. Enjoy your senses however you feel. But then way over here is something called distress. How does that happen? Social, economic, political, health, whatever, nature, all these disturbances, how do they happen? So they think the goal of human intelligence is how to work on the distress side, how to reduce it, how to stop natural disturbances, how to stop health problems, how to stop economic and political distress. Wow, over here, fully absorb yourself and understand your sense medication with no doubts, with no hang-ups, with no anxieties. This is the modern program we have right now. What does the Vedic system do? The Vedic system always presents to you that these two things, the so-called opposite poles, are just two sides of the same coin. You can't have one side without the other. Pull a coin out of your pocket and try just to have the head side and not the tail side. Impossible. So the Vedic injunction of the Vedic knowledge is that as long as there is sense gratification, there will be distress. This is a hard point for us to get into our heads. We're really trained up. We've been raised in culture, higher education, higher knowledge. And what is the result of all that? We really think there is such a thing as pure sense gratification without problems. This is how great we are. We really think such a substance exists. Maybe it's like, you know, when you get an aerosol can and you spray something out. You know, like, you know, people have that in their bathrooms. You know, I think in the restaurant, it's in the bathroom there. You know, so a spray can, you know, to get away bad smells. You just press the button and out comes this fragrance. So we think there's such a thing. We think that sense gratification exists like that. You just press the button and into the air comes this pure sense crap that's existing in of itself. Free from any problems, free from any inconveniences. And then, when there are problems or inconveniences in our life, how did that happen? We've got to work on that. No one today thinks that you work on distress by reducing sense gratification. No one thinks that way. It's two separate things. So this has affected devotees. Because unless you're a perfectly situated transcendentalist, you're going to some extent, you're going to be affected by your environment. And you have to be careful about that. You have to know the signs of the times and watch for how contaminants are infiltrating your life just due to living in the material world. So the great contamination now is that there is such a thing as pure sense grab. There is such a thing as material happiness that exists in of itself, and you've just got to get it. To get that, you need money. And when you have money, you'll probably get it. But even if you don't have so much money, still, you can enjoy your senses. This is everyone's conviction. Best to have money. We all know that. That's the gateway to unlimited sense pleasure. But if you don't have money, still enjoy your senses. That's all that modern society has to offer to you right now. People are talking about the new millennium. In a few days, the new millennium will be here. There's nothing new going to happen. It'll be the same old thing. How can I make money and enjoy my senses? That's all. That is now accepted as the be-all and end-all for existence. No one even worries anymore about religious sentiment. No one worries anymore about even material niceties in terms of how to be nice to others. It's simply, where's your money and where's your sense gratification? And you know, deep in the bottom of your heart, that if you're not happy in sense gratification, everybody else is. Deep in the bottom of your heart, you know that. He's getting his, why should I get mine? She's having a good time, what about me? Everybody is happy sometimes, some way, except me. I'm the only one not getting it. This is the pressure that society today puts on you. What are you going to do about your sense gratification? That is your duty to yourself. You have a responsibility to gratify your senses. What are you doing about that? You feel this imperative pressing on your shoulders. You feel this responsibility, acting like it's your God-given duty. In fact, sometimes people will say, God gave us these bodies to enjoy. Now we don't even worry about who gave the bodies to enjoy. Let's just get into it. So you feel it's your sacred duty, your birthright, to gratify your senses. And so much pressure and agitation comes from society. Naturally, if you're not perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness, you're going to be affected. So you have to know how to counteract the pollution. This is why we have these temples, so that we can keep our vision fixed on the ultimate goal of life and will not succumb to contamination. We were speaking last week about how you have to be very proud to think that you could recreate in your own home the sanctity that's available for the consciousness in this temple. Now, by that, we did not mean give up preaching to people to be Krishna conscious in their homes. No, that's not the point. The point is to understand the extraordinary advantage you have coming to see the deities every day. And no one would ever think that they could create such sanctity in their own home. Unless they're Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He sings Shuddha Bhakta Charanarenu, Bhajana Anukula. He described how when he was performing arti in his own home, he saw his house transform into Vaikuntha. Now, if you can do that, then all glories. But for the rest of us, we're not going to find any better atmosphere to become Krishna conscious than right here in front of the deities. That's why Prabhupada went through so much trouble to establish these temples so the minds of the devotees would be clean. Now, it is true, it's Kali Yuga, and only the chanting of Hare Krishna works. But in order to assist the process of chanting, Jiva Goswami recommends that there should also be deity worship to help cleanse the mind so we stop making so many offenses when we chant. So therefore, who would not want to take shelter of such a sanctified temple atmosphere every day? Who would think that in my own home I can do what they're doing here? Not possible. In fact, that was Prabhupada's first reply when devotees, devotees in Los Angeles started going to India and getting their own deities to put in their apartments. And then they would say, well, I don't have to come to the program, even though it's right across the street, because I've got deities in my home. So Prabhupada's response was, that's all right if the deities in your home are worshipped according to the same quality as the deities in the temple. In other words, he said, that if you have pujaris in your home who are as qualified as the pujaris in the temple, and you're doing that worship every day without fail, then we can start to think about it. Otherwise, forget it. He gave the example about rich families in India who keep the deity. They have a temple in their home. And they all go to Mangal Arati without fail. And if somebody doesn't show up for a Mangal Arati, they get fined. And if someone's going on a business trip, still the deity worship has to be covered. It's not that, we're all going off to see our relatives, we're going off to a business gathering, so we just shut the deities up for a few days while all the members of the household are gone. No, the deity worship has to go on without fail. So Prabhupada brought that up as an example of that. But if you think that you can maintain that kind of standard in your home, and he outlined that the children, they all have to be initiated brahmanas, the pujaris, in other words, they have to be of the same standard as the pujaris in the temple, regulated deity worship without fail, never mind what happens in terms of family business and family affairs, has to run. If you can do all of that, well then, you can start to talk about it. Now naturally everybody will say, well, I might as well just go across the street to the temple. And when we see the atmosphere and feel the atmosphere in this temple, our minds become cleansed. And we're protected from the super contamination of Kali Yuga. which is more intense now than 20 years ago. 20 years ago, there was some notion of religion. Now, the only religion is, what are you going to do for your senses? You have a duty to your senses. Parents don't even tell their children to be religious anymore. They just tell their children, whatever you do, as long as you're happy. That's the only mantra. As long as you're happy, dear. You've got a boyfriend, well, bring him home. Let him spend the weekend. At least, you know, we can, you know what you're up to. We can, you know, we can see everything happening at home. That's the only thing they can say. No one has any idea how to give their children any guidance. No one has any idea at all. And they think this is civilization? Now you might say, yeah, yeah, that's the way it is with those karmis. That's the way it is out in the material world. Yeah, it's all hellish. But do we understand the effects that can be on our consciousness while trying to perform Krishna consciousness? It's not that you live in a rainstorm and think a few drops aren't going to splatter on you. No, you've got to be practical. If you're living in a rainstorm, you've got to take means to protect yourself. You've got to fill up an umbrella. And even with the umbrella, something's going to sprinkle on you. You've got to know the process of decontamination. Otherwise, we're dreaming. We have to know the signs of the times. Here, the father of Srini is telling his son, because you've destroyed the king who's keeping back Kali Yuga, let me tell you what's going to happen. Let me tell you what the progress of time will bring. Time is the impersonal manifestation of the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, hello, it's me. I am time. I'm the destroyer of all things. So, we may not notice the movements of time, but it is forcing things upon us. Yes, it is forcing biological change on us. The Shadvikar, the six transformations, birth, growth, maintaining the body, giving offspring, diminution and death. That's being brought about by time. But time is also bringing about various seasons, and it's not simply winter, spring, summer, and fall. Time is bringing Kali Yuga. That is a season. So just like now it's getting a little chilly outside, we're in Los Angeles, so you know we're feeling that. We know winter is coming. But we should also feel that Kali Yuga is here, and it is affecting us. You know that when the temperature goes down here, then devotees, I've heard, they start getting the flu a bit, and it makes a little bit austere for the body. Similarly, you must be aware of what Kali Yuga does to your consciousness. And you have to be a fool not to understand these things. You're not properly taking care of yourself. Don't think that you can just live today and loiter through the material world, as Prabhupada said, without being affected. No. Someone who is actually serious to be Krishna conscious is always mindful of the dangers and how to avoid the dangers, but you should also be practical and be a bit humble and understand you're going to be affected. You are going to be touched a bit. So therefore we have these temples as a place to decontaminate, because even against your best wishes, you're going to accumulate some residual contamination. But as long as you know how to decontaminate, then you'll be protected from the core of your heart and mind being invaded by these sinful desires. So we have to be practical. We have to know how to secure ourselves, to protect our assets. Our assets, that is the valuable consciousness of a human form of life. How are we going to safeguard that? We should not think, oh, I can handle myself, it's all right, though. You don't have to be so fanatical, you know. No, you should be very concerned about the danger. Once Prabhupada, speaking very charitably, said that the difference between his disciples and him is that he's always praying to Krishna, please don't let me fall down. And why is it that there is danger of fall down? Because Maya looks attractive to us. That is the symptom of our disease. We look at sense gratification as an attractive substance. And until we become stronger in Krishna consciousness so that we see Krishna as attractive, we're going to have problems with Maya. The job of Maya is what? Just to kind of be an inert substance that just kind of You know, you think Maya has a treaty with you? You don't bother me, I don't bother you? You think it works like that? No way! It is a dynamic force, a dynamic energy. The Shastra describes that Maya has two potencies, the throwing potency and the covering potency. Now, who knows who can understand it? What shape? That's what I can pronounce, yes. Yeah. Now, what does that actually mean? Are these just kind of, you know, vague technical Sanskrit terms that you might have learned when you were a new bhakta, but as you became a mature devotee, you know, you felt more comfortable in dealing with the material world, and naturally, as you become older, you want to be accepted by society at large. But we should analyze the society that you might want to be accepted by. When you actually look at it through the eyes of Shastra, you want to run the other way. That doesn't mean we are cultists or escapists. No, we recognize disaster when we see it. Is that a fault? If there's a house on fire, and you're in, and then you run outside to escape the burning house, and there I am in the street saying, you're escaping. Does that make sense to everyone? No. Somebody escapes the burning house, and everyone's, oh, you've been saved, how fortunate you are, how lucky you are. So we have to understand the nature of society, and then we should discuss whether we want to fit in or not. That is the point. As the verse describes here, thus they will be more attracted to economic development for sense gratification, and as a result, there will be an unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. Now, if you're having a little difficulty understanding Prabhupada's purports, the language looks a bit severe. Dogs and monkeys? Who, me? Come on. I've got a PhD. I dress nicely according to the latest fashions. How can I be on the level of dogs and monkeys? I had some doubts. This is one thing. I don't think I was having doubts, but this is one thing I did. If I have some time, which isn't too often, I go to the zoo. And I check out the animals through the eyes of Prabhupada's purports. And then everything starts to click. It's called a zoo meditation. It's very educational. Now, I know some of you householders, you probably took your children to the zoo, but I mean, if you go in a different consciousness, you can also take your kids, but if you're going to let me understand how humans today are not different from these creatures here, you'll be shocked what you see. It's amazing. The animals are far more expert in material activities than human beings. Far more expert. And with no anxiety, that's what strikes you. They eat, sleep, mate, and defend with no anxiety. And we are doing those things overrun with anxiety. You just go and watch the chimpanzees. They have family life. The mother chimp is holding her baby chimp very tightly to her chest. And what's father chimp doing? He's laying on a rock in the sun. No anxiety. No anxiety whatsoever. I was watching one, Father Chimp. He was laying on his back like he's at a beach. Just, you know, in the hot sun. And then off to one side was a clump of fresh leaves that he was eating. So he wouldn't even look at the leaves. He would just reach back without looking, grab a leaf. And meanwhile, Mother Chimp is there holding the baby chimp tightly to her chest, and the child is holding on, mommy. So you can see, these things are going on. They've got no anxieties. You don't have to worry about working. It's all just arranged by nature. The baboons, they're the most interesting. You ever see a pack of baboons? You look at them, and they just look at you. You know how baboons look? I mean, really weird-looking creatures with these big faces, big cheeks. So you look at them, and they just look at you like, who are you? Why aren't you a baboon? We are baboons. We are where it's at. So just sit there and watch it. They've got their society very nicely worked out. When the lady baboons, they don't have to go shopping. They don't have to go to Govinda's and get those, you know, one of those slips the ladies are wearing now as dresses and the shawls. They don't have to do any of that. What happens when the lady baboon is ready? The ladies have bright red bottoms. And as soon as, you know, they're ready to court, the bright red bottoms glow. And all the male baboons know it's party time. No fashions to buy, no jewelry, no makeup. Just the men, they just watch, you know, when the red bottom starts to glow, they know. The time has come. So simple. No big deal about it. You can learn all this just by going to a zoo and seeing through the eyes of the Shastra what's going on here. Don't just go and, buy some popcorn or something. Actually, just go and look through the bird works. You can take your family and see what are these creatures doing. And then ask yourself, how are my desires different than these creatures' desires? That is the challenge. They're mating with no problem. Watch the monkeys. Prabhupada mentions the monkeys in this purport. They just are so active. You can't believe how active monkeys are. They, especially if you see them in these modern natural habitat zoos. You know, they don't keep animals in cages anymore in a lot of zoos. They have the natural recreated atmosphere. So the monkeys are just running up and down trees and ropes all day long. That's all they do. So active. Then, as Prabhupada said, you ask yourself, what's the purpose of this activity? All this activity, but what's the goal? And then you ask yourself, what's the goal of all my activities? I'm working, I'm struggling, I'm sporting, I'm playing. What's the whole point of it? These are questions that we have to ask ourselves. What is so great about what we're doing? Last time I went to a zoo, I studied the zebras. Did you know? Now, what mother here can do this? When a mother zebra gives birth to a baby zebra, that baby zebra can stand up in 15 minutes. Any mother here can have babies do that? And after 1 hour, that baby zebra can run as fast as the rest of the herd. So, how can you compete with that? This is what nature is doing automatically. So now you have to think, what is nature not doing automatically? Nature is not making me Krishna conscious automatically. Material nature is not doing that. That you have to choose. You have to take shelter of the spiritual nature. Dhyanam prakritim asyam. Otherwise, you're going to be dragged along by the material nature. You have to actually consciously choose to cultivate spiritual life. That material nature will not give you. You cannot think you're just going to learn by experience. No, it's not the job of material experience to teach you anything. That's why Shukadeva Goswami says in the second canto, Pashyanna Bina Pashyati. Although sufficiently experienced, we still do not see. Because it's not the job of material experience to educate you about the workings of Maya. The only thing material nature does is continue to offer you illusion and then present the situation that, well, you were defeated last time, but this time you'll succeed. That's the only purpose of material nature. How to allure, how to deviate you from Krishna. Prabhupada once explained that the job of the material energy is to present herself as more attractive than Krishna. Now that is a big job, but it's going on. How can anything present itself as more attractive than Krishna? Krishna is so attractive, he's even attracted to himself. You all know that when he's in Dwarka and there's a beautiful marble pillar or column and it reflects. So Krishna sees a reflection of himself on the pillar and wonders, who is this extraordinarily beautiful person? I'm feeling like I want to embrace this person, just like the gopi. Who is this? He's naturally unartificially attracted to himself because he is the cause of all causes, the all-attractive. Now, you can try that. You can look at a mirror and see if you're attracted to yourself. I remember recently one Hollywood actor. Yeah, he told all the news media, even got down to New Zealand. Some famous guy from Hollywood. And he told the reporters, I would date myself. I'm so precious. I'm so fine. I would date myself if I, Krishna can actually say that. Krishna is actually, and not being presumptuous or anything, Krishna is actually attracted to himself because that's how attractive he is. But Maya has the unfortunate job of presenting herself as more attractive than Krishna. And this shows how off we are. How can there even be a question of a struggle in terms of our attraction to Krishna rather than Maya? Nothing stands up to attraction for Krishna, but we are covered, and this shows our unfortunate situation. We feel attraction to Maya as if there's some competition. There's no competition, yet we see it in that way. We're bewildered by the shadow potency. We think there's substance in the shadow, and then the real substance, Krishna, I don't know, a bit hazy, maybe Krishna's a belief, or I don't know. But sense gratification? Oh, that's real. That's just happening right there. It's just sizzling in front of your eyes. You can just reach out. It's right there. This is the symptom of our unfortunate situation. So we should not think that the material energy is just some inert, non-dynamic atmosphere. No. It's doing things to us. Now, what is it doing? Those two Sanskrit terms, meaning the throwing potency and the covering potency. Prabhupada explained, the throwing potency means, he gave his example, here you are doing devotional service in the temple with the devotees, and all of a sudden, Maya just roars in your ear. What are you doing here? Who are you trying to fool? Get out of here! That's the throwing potency. You think you're just innocently minding your own business, and all of a sudden you're knocked down. And if you haven't been attending Bhagavatam class and you don't have a service that you can dedicate your life to, you can be thrown out by that kind of throwing potency because you don't have anything to hang on to. All of a sudden, we don't think that we have these weaknesses. We think, I'm a rational person. I'm in control of myself. We don't understand we are tiny. That's why we're in Maya in the first place. How is it that the superior energy comes under the control of the inferior potency? Because we are tiny. And because it's Krishna's arrangement due to our illicit desire. So, because we are tiny, we can't stand up to Maya. But still we think, I've got it together. I've learned a lot. I know how far to go. No. If we don't have a service we can dedicate our life to, that is the glory of absorption and devotional service. You're giving your life to Lord Caitanya, so Lord Caitanya will stick up for you. But if you're just going to kind of not be very serious about devotional service, then where's your protection going to come from? You have to endear yourself to Krishna. And then, even when you want to get away, Krishna won't let you. That's the kind of relationship you want with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you get that through service. That even if you want to get away from Krishna because you've done such dear service, Krishna does everything to keep you. That's what we want. That's the kind of protection. That's the kind of insurance policy we need. So the temple community is a chance to develop, to attain that kind of insurance policy. How to become dear to Krishna so that even if I get into trouble, and the storm clouds come in every devotee's life, Krishna knows how to test you to see how sincere you are. So you want to be ready for the examination. You want to be ready for any attacks from Maya. And it's very easy how to do that. Do your service in such a way that you become dear to Krishna. Dedicate your life. Find some service you can dedicate your life to. Those kinds of devotees, they have the best protection against Maya. Otherwise, don't underestimate the power of the material energy. Suddenly your consciousness is invaded by these very powerful broadcasts, taking over your whole consciousness. So if you don't fall down right away, you do it gradually. That's the growing potency. And then, that's not the end of it. You think that'd be enough? No. There's the covering potency. After you're thrown deep into Maya's clutches, she covers you over. And you can't see what's going on. You all know, you've had the experience of trying to talk to devotees who succumb to Maya. It's like they can't see what you're talking about. They're beyond the point of philosophy. They're coded. They're covered over. They're encapsulated. And you wonder, you try to be philosophical. You try to preach from experience. Oh, I know people who've been through that. And it's not going to work out the way you think it is. And you may talk, but because they've already been covered, they can't see. And part of the glory of being in Maya is, if I don't see it, it doesn't exist. Then you know you have the blessings of Maya. What do you mean? I don't see any problem. I don't see Krishna. I don't see any retribution. I don't see any reaction. I haven't followed the principles for some time now, and I'm doing fine. I mean, you know, no lightning has struck me. Then you know you've got the blessings of Maya, that you can't see the connection between sinful activity and distress. A devotee knows they are one and the same. Sense gratification is distressful. Now, there's no doubt, if we're going to attain that kind of vision, where we can properly understand sense gratification, it's going to take some work. And that's why Prabhupada has given us his books. You've got to take these books in your hand and really meditate on these purports. Because I tell you what the basic problem is, once again. Sense gratification looks good, but the purport is saying otherwise. Krishna is ever present everywhere, but we think Krishna is far away. So you have to take these books and read them with the idea of deprogramming yourself. You actually have to read these books with the idea that I'm going to give myself an actual brain. But those who think that they're intelligent on their own, they can't do that. And therefore they're very weak in the face of attacks from the material energy. So once again, we have to know the signs of the times. It's all being pushed by time. Shukadeva Goswami will explain to Pritchett Maharaj in the 12th canto, Tatascha Anudinam Dharma, Satyam Shautyam Shamadaya, Kalina Balina Raja, Namshuk Yayur Balam Smriti. With each passing day, the deterioration increases in Kali Yuga. And we think things are getting better? No. For those who have not taken shelter under Lord Caitanya's umbrella, with each passing day, things get worse. Don't be fooled. Don't think. They look like they're doing okay out there. They look, it's not that bad. People look like they're enjoying. Not at all. You have to learn to see through the eyes of Shastra, because it is not the job of Maya to let you see clearly what's going on. This is the problem. You think, I can just absorb myself in material life. Now understand. Oh, you know, they're teaching at university. They're explaining things. No, they are not explaining anything. What university can you go to which will teach you that sense gratification automatically means distress? I went to the best tuition now, $25,000 a year. I don't remember one course where they taught me sense gratification means distress. I think I told you before, I remember one of the happiest moments of university when we were all in Maya, when the medical, you know, they had a big hospital, you know, for research, and the scientists in the medical division of the university announced to the students, now we have available to try out on any student morning after pills. If you had your sense gratification and you didn't, and the woman wasn't protected, don't worry. Within 3 days, bring her to the clinic and we'll give her the prototypes of morning after pills. We'll take care of everything. The students were in euphoria. What a university! How fortunate we are to go here! I remember at the lunch table, we were all talking like this. This is amazing. We are at the forefront of science. How fortunate we are to be here at this place. Morning after pills. What a liberation! That was one of the high moments. No course ever taught the things we're hearing from Bhagavatam that sometimes we take for granted. How to analyze society. How to analyze the signs of the time. How to see what your consciousness is really about. How to look at the animals and try to understand you're different from the animals. Now, we've only learned that from Prabhupada and his books. So let us be practical. Let us take advantage of the wonderful facilities we have here. Let us be humble and understand how easily we can be victimized by material nature. And let's help one another how to make advancement by advancing Srila Prabhupada's mission. Any questions? Yes.
Based on what you said, what would be your understanding? Because there seems to be a continuum